So good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, this is going to be a very interesting interview. First, happy Thanksgiving to all of my American friends who are listening and or going to listen to the archived interview. And I have a special thank you to Jillian Holloway, who is here to talk to me on her Thanksgiving, and but very excited because you have a very interesting book. It's called The Complete Dream Book of Love and Relationships. Discover what your dreams and intuition reveal about you and your love life. So it's a very interesting book. Welcome, Jillian, to Intuitive Soul Radio.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Yes. So tell us a little bit, I guess, really about your own journey. What sort of started you where you are? Like, what kind of brought you into, I mean, I know you've done a few books on dreams. This one happens to be on love and relationships. But, you know, what is your story? How did you get to where you are?
Well, I was training to be a fairly traditional therapist. And when we were learning about dreams and the imagery in dreams, I could see that not only do dreams give us ideas about what's going on and how we're reacting, but they also come sort of charged with the emotional power to make changes. Yeah. So that if a person got good advice from, you know, we would practice doing therapy with each other in the class, and good advice just doesn't cut it. And good advice from a dream comes loaded up so that people can take an idea and run with it. So it's as if the information from our dreams is tailored not only to give us a new insight, but to empower us to direct our journey a little bit differently. So that's what got me excited about dreams, and I started working with dream sharing groups, and I was just hooked, and it really kind of pulled me. You know how sometimes the universe grabs you by the shoulder and pulls you over in a new direction? That's what happened to me. I really gave up the idea of being a traditional psychotherapist and moved into working and studying about dreams and doing research with the contemporary dreams that we have. You know, we know a lot about Freud, and we know a lot about ancient Greece, and we know a lot about mythology, but really the information about what we're dreaming about today has been kind of sparse. So that's what I've dedicated the last 20 years to investigating. What are we dreaming about and why, and what good can it do us? So it's been a really exciting but unexpected journey for me.
Yeah, I mean, you do talk about that in the book on how, you know, a lot of times, like you say, you can go to a therapist or you can talk to your friend or you can, you know, you can try and get, you know, the guidance that may help you. You may be able to talk to an intuitive. You may get, you know, all sorts of information, but that, you know, really our dreams and, you know, whether they come from, you know, sometimes they're coming from our soul or sometimes they're coming from our subconscious or how it is that it actually, you know, manifests within us, you know, but it is that aspect of us that knows us best. I mean, there's absolutely nothing that can be hidden from our subconscious, where we hide all the time things from our therapists and our friends. And so I thought that was a really unique perspective, although maybe it's not so unique, but it felt, you know, like it was a refreshing piece of information that, you know, maybe people sort of don't think about.
Well, it is, and my interest in it is not because it's beautiful or mystical or weird. You know, I don't like alternative ideas simply because they're quirky. I like them because they're the most effective game in town, really. And so this is where the power is, and this is where the empowerment is. And that's why I've become more interested in intuition and all of these areas, because this is what enables us to make wise choices and to integrate the shifting sands of our travel, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, it's it. I mean, it can be a very I mean, you really do need to have someone help you interpret some of our dreams, because some of them are just so whacked out and bizarre and don't follow any linear pattern. And I'm sure that there's a whole reason in that. But you definitely need somebody who sort of can help you navigate through your dreams. It's a really interesting journey. And being an intuitive as well, I'm sure you are, that probably it's developed over the years, has it, your intuition?
It has. One of the things that I noticed, as you know, once you start asking questions for which there are no objective answers, right, a part of your consciousness sort of reaches out and goes, well, I'll be right back with the answer. And that's, of course, what happens with dream work sometimes. There are questions and puzzles, and, you know, hour after hour, day after day, something started to happen with me that I would offer ideas in a dream about information that the dreamer hadn't given me yet. And I realized I'm sort of reading the wisdom of the dream before we get to unraveling it. So that's become part of the mix too, and that was what started me becoming more interested in intuition and learning how that process works, because there really wasn't very much good information about it when that started happening to me.
Right.
So I had to do my own research, as I'm sure you probably did too.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting journey when you start flowing into your intuition, because there's especially with me, because I'm more clairsentient, I'm more feeling, I'm not your typical traditional clairvoyant or clairaudient. So when, for me, it really was a matter of trying to understand a navigation that, you know, not a lot of people spoke of. There's a lot more now that are talking about it, but at the time, not a lot of people were even, you know, acknowledging that that was a form of intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so why love and relationships? I mean, I have my own ideas about what is happening in the world, and how the fact that, you know, this is probably the first time in history within the last probably 20 years that there's been more women, you know, single, divorced, separated, between the ages of 30 and 50 than ever in history. So love and relationships seem to be a pretty hot topic these days, because it's unprecedented. There's just so many women out there, which obviously means there's so many men as well. But, you know, so a lot of women are, you know, choosing not to even enter into relationships, or it's an interesting phenomenon that I think is going on.
Yes, it is. It's fascinating. And another thing that's happening in this mix is that we're all becoming so sensitive and so intuitive. Some kind of filter is dropping away, and it's being replaced by abilities that are unexpected for a lot of people. So what I hear from women, from dreamers and clients, is that they're feeling a connection with a certain person. And because of that, empathy and connectedness and sometimes telepathy, they're feeling like, well, maybe this person is my soulmate because I'm so tuned into that person.
Right.
And what I find often, sometimes they are tuning into someone that they have a soul connection with, but often they're tuning in because of their own burgeoning abilities rather than because they found the person that they are destined to be with, so to speak.
Yes.
And so we have to do some detective work around that and discover that actually they're becoming psychic in all facets of their life. So they don't necessarily need to kind of project onto that ability as it manifests with a particular person. And sometimes that's a hard lesson for us to open up to.
Yes. Yes. I would think so, yes. Okay, so you sort of talk about in the introduction how dreams work. Do you want to sort of let us know what you...
Well, one of the things that makes it helpful around the idea of relationships is that the dreams that we have around relating are a little bit different than some of the other dreams that we have throughout life. And the good news is that dreams that are focused on relationship tend to be very intuitive and therefore a little bit more readily understood, because they give you a strong emotional wallop when they come. that is, they can give you sort of a thumbs up sign that this is a great track that you're on. This is a opportunity that gives you a lot of promise for the future. People will have dreams about building houses when they meet someone that is an opportune partner for them. They'll also have dreams about gardens that are overflowing and that sort of a harvest time dream. Dreams set in their hometown as though they're returning home. And there are lots of dreams like that. They are not so romantic and they're not so sexy, but they're actually a harbinger of something promising in that dreamer's future. And these will begin often as soon as they meet that particular individual. As soon as you have a first date with someone, the dreaming mind begins to articulate its opinion about whether this is a good prospect or not so hot. And so that gives people a real edge, because even though you have a long ways to go in assessing the viability of a connection, your dreaming mind is already at the bottom line. It's already giving you sort of a printout on how this could go for you. And it's very important to take advantage of that early. It could be an early warning, or it could be an early signal that you're on the right track.
Right. Talk about the three blinders that you discuss in Chapter 1.
Well, two of the blinders are fear and desire.
Mm.
And as you know, that's something that sort of confounds our intuitive signals all the time. When we have something we're really afraid of and we worry, that tends to mix up our signals. And when we have something that we really want to have happen and we're kind of projecting our agenda forward onto a situation, that gives us a great deal of trouble as well. So those are the main things that people need to worry about. And of course, when you're dealing with a love relationship, that's where we have a lot of fear and desire.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to mess it up. We don't want to get hurt again. And we also want to have things work well, and we want to be liked.
Mm.
So trying to project a particular way, it's almost like a job interview. You want to get the job, you want to get hired. So trying to project a positive image of yourself also messes up the mix and makes it more difficult for you to understand the signals that you're receiving about what's going on.
Right, and that attachment issue, the fact that, you know, we are so attached to having things happen the way we want to, or having things, you know, the outcome that we're wanting, that it's interesting, because I think in this case, it's certainly not just dreams, but it's our logic, it's our life, and it certainly is our intuition. I mean, they all sort of fall in together when we have these attachments or these fears or these desires that can sort of block the truth or the purity from reaching us.
Well, yes, and a number, I see it more with women than men, but men do this too, is sort of put a yoke on their shoulders as far as how they should behave or what they should want. You know, they should marry again because they've got young children,
right.
Or they should stay with a partner even though they've outgrown them, or they should try to move toward a relationship that doesn't feel right because they have a habit of avoidance. And so they kind of mess themselves up by putting this mantle of how they think they ought to behave onto their ability to react and respond spontaneously. And that's well-intended, but it is a way that we put blinders on ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm. So when you're, I mean, now I'm going to go into your business, but when you're working with your clients or your, I guess, clients, I'm assuming then that you help them sort of work through not just what their dreams are telling them, but to how to work through the fears and the beliefs and everything that sort of blocks us from achieving what we're, you know, really here to kind of all sort of wanting to have in our lives.
Well, that's right. And one of the things that's important to play with around dreams is that understanding what a dream reflects is one thing. It's sort of deciphering the code, if you will, or understanding the symbolism. That's one part of it. And then the next part of it is that given the dream is reflecting something, then what? Then what are the implications for you? So that's the second half of the work, is really you've got this sign. You know, we're always wishing the universe would give us a sign. So, okay, you've got a sign. Now, how would you like to respond? Or what would be the highest response for you, given that you've gotten this sign? So that's how it works, really. That's where the benefit is. And sometimes it's not clear. Sometimes the dream is very, gives us a strong hint. You know, if you dream that you're drowning, or sometimes there'll be a pattern in a relationship, and a woman will have, very typically a woman will have an early warning sign that someone has put duct tape over her mouth, for example. That's a very dark and alarming image to have if you're just starting a new relationship, that something has stifled you or cut off your voice. But they'll get these very ominous signals in the midst of what seems to be a nice romance. Mm-hmm. And those early signs are to be taken to heart. Not necessarily that they need to walk away or, you know, run, not walk to the nearest exit. That's for them to decide. But to take that sign and put it out on the table with the other bits of information and evidence and experience and feelings that they're having, and not hide it or dismiss it. And if they'll do that, then they have the advantage, because usually a dream, if you take it seriously, will allow you to make good decisions earlier on, rather than wait until some disaster happens and the car drives off the cliff, so to speak.
Right. And, you know, and then we get into all the work that a lot of us are trying to do, and where we say, well, it's not ever the other person, because in most cases it's not ever the other person. It's really truly our own journey. It's what we sort of bring to the table, and it's our fears that, you know, we can't be heard, or, you know, we're not being acknowledged, or, you know, we have to change to be loved. And so then it really becomes, okay, so is this really a sign about the other person, or is this a sign that is bringing up all of my fears and all of my triggers that I have to deal with before I get into the relationship that may or may not be the one, you know, that's going to benefit me? So it's kind of a, it's being, you know, someone who does a lot of my own work. I mean, it kind of makes it, you know, a little bit frustrating sometimes, because it's like, okay, you deal with your issues and you deal with them and you deal with them, you deal with them. And then no matter what, there's like each layer of that onion, you can still find it where you get triggered and, you know, your old pattern resurfaces. And, you know, sometimes it's not even the other person, or a lot of times it's not even the other person necessarily doing anything, is it's just us sort of needing to get that last piece, or needing to, you know, really learn how to respond instead of reacting out of our fears and triggers and patterns.
That's right. That's right. One of the stories in the book is about a man who was married, had an unfortunate marriage, and then divorced and remarried, and had a great relationship with his new wife. But he kept dreaming that he was back in his first marriage, arguing with his first wife. And he asked me, you know, am I still hung up on her, or am I flashing back to her? Because I really was miserable then, and I'm really happy now. But he was having issues come up in his second marriage, where his new wife would make suggestions or talk to him in a way that kind of triggered him back into his old pattern of feeling criticized, because his first wife had always been one that wanted to fix him as though he were a home improvement project. And she was constantly trying to fix him up and show him the error of his ways. And, of course, he'd had an overdose of that, so he was sensitized to that, or any way that he could sort of construe that his new wife was talking to him that way. And it would set him off, and he would be off and running. And his dreams, his recurring dream of being back in his first marriage, we decided was actually trying to show him, look, here's the movie that you are playing. This isn't really what's happening in this good relationship, but this is the movie that you run when you interpret her actions or her voice in that particular way. And just knowing that that was the scenario behind the scenes really liberated him and gave him a lot of choices and was a huge relief to him because he'd been kind of worrying and thinking all kinds of terrible scenarios about his new relationship, which in fact weren't the case.
Yeah, it is interesting how our fears sort of take over at times, whether they're actually happening or not. It's just an interesting way that we sort of evolve on our journey to try and understand ourselves and not, you know, overanalyze or try to change somebody else, which we're so good at wanting to do. It's never us, right? We have to change the other person. If only they could change this one thing, they'd be perfect, right?
That's right. Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about the different types of dreams. You sort of talked about a flashback dream just now where you said, you know, he was having a flashback of, you know, the past and what that means. But I like the romantic memory imprints because that seems to have this, I don't know, it has this nice feeling to it.
Well, I like to talk about the idea of imprints because we don't know exactly why this is, but it seems that across the lifespan, when we have a first experience, a first important experience, particularly including relationships and sexuality and the first time we're in love, that person and that relationship tends to become imprinted. And we'll dream about that person for the rest of our lives. And that doesn't mean that that was the one and whoops, you missed out on the relationship of a lifetime because you were 16. It just means that that person becomes almost like a postage stamp with a movie star's picture on it. They become the commemorative face on your idea of love and romance. Mm-hmm. So that today, when you're working on your relationship with your husband or your partner, you'll still dream about that first love relationship. And it simply means that this is the story of your current love situation. So that's an important thing for people to realize because I get letters from, you know, grandmothers in their 80s saying, you know, I'm still dreaming about the boy I met on summer vacation. Was he the one? And so I'm happy to explain to them, no, the likelihood is that you're dreaming about love in general and that this is the imprint. That's one reason why we keep dreaming we're back in high school or dreaming we're back in our parents' home. The first picture we have of a certain type of situation tends to be the thing that we dream about from that point forward.
Yeah, I'm just now thinking about my dreams. But yes, it's funny because there are different people that come up at different times in my life depending on, I guess, where I am, you know, because there's not just one particular one that necessarily suggests love to me. There was, I think, several. And I think that's interesting.
Well, yes. And one way to get a handle on this is the flavor, the emotional flavor of the relationship that you had with that person. And that will be a nuance or an important, you know, sort of like the movie score in your current work around relationships or your current joy around relationships. For example, I have two brothers, and one is a doctor, and he's like Mr. Perfect. He's very intellectual and responsible, the firstborn son. The other brother is a ne'er-do-well. He's a wild man, and he lives out in the wilds, and he's a nature photographer, and he seldom comes into town, you know. So they're opposite poles. So in my love relationships, I tended over my adult life to either have relationships with perfect men who were high achievers or with troubled, brooding men who were misunderstood. And I would often have dreams about the brother archetype when I was involved with a particular person who was a match with that archetype. So I was trying to work out my, you know, my sense of easily understanding a certain personality type in a man and being drawn to him. Not because I'm drawn to my brothers. There was nothing kinky about this. It just is a matter of the heart where you understand and resonate with a particular storyline that a person's living.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it really is interesting to understand dreams, and I love the fact that you've drawn from, you know, over 30,000 experiences of dreams and people to allow yourself to, you know, to have this knowledge base. But it is true that, you know, when we both took psychology 101 and Freud was, you know, analyzing all of our dreams, it's like, okay, seriously, I just don't see this.
Right.
So it is nice to know that it's developed more onto an understanding that, you know, certain people reflect certain feelings and that's how we relate to them. And so I do appreciate that, because yeah, Freud really wasn't doing it for me, and Jung was wonderful because he brought in that spiritual, but there's just so much more that it's...
Yes, yes. Well, it's, I mean, the common thinking now is that dreams are so multifaceted. They're like us, you know, and right. No matter how much you understand or believe you understand about something, there's always more. And so with that disclaimer, we can move forward and start to make the connections that our bodies will resonate with and tell us, yes, this is true, yes, you're on the right track, yes, I'm sort of getting goosebumps as we talk about that. So even though I make some generalizations to get people started, that's just what they are. I'm just trying to provide you with some patterns that are very, very common so that you can get started making deeper associations as you move forward with your dreams.
Right. So let's move on to the romantic personality style, because I did really enjoy reading about those. They certainly, it's funny, because I think I went from the first one to the fourth one throughout my my life.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I really liked it, because I liked how you talked about the relationship loop and to help people. I thought that was really quite brilliant. So let's talk a little bit about the four different personality styles.
Okay, well, this is something that I've developed over the years, and these are primarily for women. But
yes.
I've seen clients that have patterns, and they keep doing the same patterns over and over again. And they are typical for their personality type and for their gifts. So the first type that I talked about is what I call the sparkler. And this is the communication personality, someone who is very, very gifted. Often they'll be an air sign astrologically. But they're very capable of making connections with people, and that is their life. They really need to sort of run around like a bird, communicating and connecting. And if they can't do that, something in them starts to shut down. And I tell the story in the book of a woman who was actually partnered with a man, and he adored her, but he was a homebody, and he wanted to keep her home all the time. And she started to develop all kinds of health problems that none of the doctors could explain or understand. But those of us who knew her well, we could actually see the light going out in her. The change in her skin color and in the light of her eyes. As she stayed with this person over a period of 6 months, and he sort of closed her off from her friends and her social activities. So the sparkler has this pattern of she's attractive. She's almost like, people will be like a moth to a flame with this type of personality, because she's so vivacious and vital and such an easy communicator. And she will often attract people who... I talk about sort of capturing the sun and taking it home for yourself. Well, the sun belongs in the sky for everyone. And so this sparkler has to be part of the world, shining, or she's not going to do very well. So often she will attract someone who isn't a good match for her personality, but who is attracted to her personality. And she'll have to go on the track of finding out that something is killing her, so to speak, or driving her crazy. And in order to sort of wake up and then get out of that relationship. So that's something that the sparkler needs to be very aware of, that even though someone might love her and she might love that person back, they need to be someone that will allow her her freedom and not clip her wings, so to speak. The next personality is called the nature spirit, and this is someone that is... loves the world, But Neat is more of an introverted personality and needs to have downtime and quiet time and some solitude in order to restore their batteries. And that's something that's not well understood in today's society. Mm-hmm. And it's also someone who needs to be out in nature very frequently in order to recharge. So they need access to nature to get outside and outdoors, and they also need to be around animals frequently, either animals in the wild, or they need to have pets around and in the home in order to sort of keep their balance. So this is someone that is very empathic, often very psychic, and they don't like to explain themselves or explain their needs. So what happens for the nature spirit is they get in a relationship, the other person wants to be with them all the time, and they have trouble saying, you know what, I need a weekend off from you. I need time off for good behavior to recharge my batteries. Well, that's something that partners don't understand very well, and the nature spirit needs to just be able to articulate their needs more and not have to choose between withdrawing from the relationship so they don't go crazy and being in a relationship full-time but just feeling exhausted constantly because they're not able to get that solitude that they need in order to restore themselves.
Hmm. And what astrological sign is that? The Earth sign, then?
Or is well, the they can warrior be really almost any astrological okay. sign except air. I'm a nature spirit, and I'm a Sag, and okay. I have a lot of fire.
Okay.
And so I have to be in the world kind of starting fires and catalyzing things. But if I don't get time in nature, I start to get sick. Or time alone, and I start to get, you know, start to just feel terrible. So that's been one of my cycles in relationship, is that, you know, I'm pulled into the relationship and then I have to withdraw, and it drives people crazy because they think I'm abandoning them.
Right.
So
interesting.
Yeah, and that's something that if you know you're that type, it's a big light bulb to find out that that's just built in, and that the task for that personality type is that they have to learn to translate for their loved ones and let them know ahead of time, okay, I'm going to pull back, but it's about recharging my batteries. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of negotiate your needs in the relationship, but it's a hard lesson to learn. Mm-hmm. Another personality type that is fascinating to me is what I call the warrior princess. And this is a type of woman who is really a high achiever, typically, very strong, almost carrying a strong masculine energy. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a masculine personality, but they have a sort of warrior quality to them, almost a martial quality. Often they're very athletic, and to relax, they'll go parachuting out of planes or scuba diving, or they'll go to the shooting range, and often they'll be involved in things that are very, you know, you think, boy, this woman might be a secret agent or something. She's got so many skills. And in their career, they'll be, you know, an accountant and running part of the government, or they'll be a brain surgeon. I mean, they're just really incredibly competent people and very stalwart and stoic and just very tough and brave. But their pattern in relationships is that they don't really ever consider whether someone is an appropriate match for them. And these women tell me often, like, oh, I had this great relationship with this guy. He cooked me dinner, and he seemed wonderful. And now, at the end of the day, I realize that he's just kind of weak, and I'm always attracting weaklings. Why is that? Well, this personality type is so busy striding through life, righting wrongs and being heroic and living a life that's larger than life, that if they meet someone and this person looks like they're clean and they're healthy, they'll just take them home and figure, you know, he seems like a nice guy, he seems like he likes me, he'll do just fine. Because they want to get the work of relationship over quickly. So they bring home the wrong person, and they let the relationship play out until they can't stand it anymore and they want to get away, rather than just evaluating the person up front. So the lesson for the warrior spirit is that they need to have some kind of criteria that they use to evaluate a potential partner, rather than to just accept whoever shows up on the doorstep.
Yes. A lot of Mars energy.
Yes, very much. Yeah. And the fourth type is what I call the dolphin, because they're committed and involved with water, and they're also committed and involved with air. So they have big feelings, and they're very comfortable around other people's big feelings, but they also are in the business of communication. So I can understand why you might have connected with that, mm-hmm. because these are people who are very much involved in saving the world and saving the planet, saving humanity. They're on a mission, and they have a huge heart, a huge amount of love, and they also are driven to communicate about it and to articulate around it. Mm-hmm. So these are very special people, and their task around relationship, because they have such a big heart, is that they can love with their whole heart and love almost anyone, and love enough for the both of us. So this is a lesson for them, that they shouldn't get in the boat and do the rowing for both people all the time, because they're so gifted and such big spirits that they can easily do that, and they can find themselves doing that for a lifetime if they're not careful.
Yeah.
And they also have a special need to think out loud sometimes, to talk and talk things out, and to stay up all night in deep conversation with their partner. So if they partner with someone who really isn't into emotion or isn't into talking, they are going to have dreams and nightmares that they are fish out of water, literally, or that they're in a dry, barren landscape, or that they entrust someone else to take care of the fish in the aquarium, and they come home in the dream. They come home from vacation, and their fish are in about 1 inch of water in an otherwise dry fish tank because the partner didn't put any water in. So these are all metaphors for their emotional life. If they partner with someone who isn't emotional, or who is more of a dry thinker type, which of course they're very drawn to, and that person's very drawn to them, it's all too common for them to make that mistake. So they really need to ask themselves, can I stay up all night talking with this person? Will he or she be there for me in that way? And if not, it's not going to work for them long term.
Right. It's interesting how, you know, everybody says, oh, opposites attract. But, you know, when you think about it, yeah, opposites do attract. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there are soul partner or somebody that will, I guess, nurture us in on our journey.
That's right. And what can happen very often is that people will be drawn to someone who will kind of do the half of life that they're not interested in doing.
Right.
So the dolphin will end up in an unwritten contract with their partner who says, look, I'm not into feelings. You do the feeling stuff for both of us. And that they will end up becoming sort of marginalized, and they'll go on the continuum more and more and more into the hysterical side of things, while their partner becomes more and more and more hyper-logical and kind of robotic. And they will polarize each other, where one becomes the logic person and one becomes the hysteric. And I've seen that a lot with dolphins who are not living their life purpose, and they're stuck in a relationship where they're labeled kind of the hysterical person, because every time they have a conversation with their partner, they end up bursting into tears. Mm. Well, it's partly because they're carrying the emotion for both of them, and they're crying the tears for their partner.
Yep, been there, but done that. yes. Let's talk about faulty beliefs, because I think that's pretty key when we're talking about love and relationships.
Well, one of the things that comes out in dreams that are kind of irrational, or where people are doing crazy things, often those types of dreams will reveal that a person is laboring with a false belief about themselves. One of the false beliefs that I find that's very common is that you have to sort of erase yourself in order to be in a relationship.
Only a woman, of course, but yes.
Well, oddly enough, I mean, it's more typical for women,
yeah.
But I have seen men that have got that belief as well.
Yeah.
And it's where the person feels that they're... Often they'll dream of being in a room that's too small. It's kind of like a Stephen King novel where the room gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and the person gets more and more scrunched up, that's one example of that pattern. And it's usually this is a person who had a parent in early life who had some kind of problem, or there was a dynamic in the family where they were in crisis mode. And so this individual got the message, for heaven's sake, don't have any needs. We've got bigger problems here to deal with. So later in life, that personality knows, well, when I am in a love relationship, it's really important for me to sort of cancel out my own needs in order to make this relationship work. And that goes very, very deep, and it's very, very hard for people to identify that and bring it out into the light of day so that they have a choice to change it. And dreams are one way that we can get a handle on that and recognize when it's happening. So that's a very expensive and uncomfortable pattern to have, and it's one that a lot of us with big hearts have learned early in life. So it's great if you can identify it and make some changes around that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know if you saw Eat, Love, Pray, but where Julia Roberts at one point, the very beginning of the relationship, you know, somebody says, oh, you know, you used to look like, and it was her first husband, and he goes, now you sort of look like your new boyfriend. It's like, but it's true, like we tend, you know, to sort of just compromise, or we just, it's like, it's not even compromise, there's times where we just sort of erase ourselves. We become the other person, what the other person needs and wants, and sort of leave our own needs and wants behind.
Yes, and what it should be is a temporary tactic for a particular situation. Mm-hmm. So in my family, I can remember when we would have company, and if we had, you know, like some pie left over, the company would get the pie, and my mom would say, oh, I don't want any. I had plenty of it last night, and I'm really sick of it. She would pretend, you know, so that everybody would feel good about having a piece of pie and her not having a piece. Well, that's a great tactic if you have surprise guests, and it's just a gracious thing to do. There's nothing wrong with it. But to live your life saying, I don't want any pie, you guys go ahead, in every situation, is to live your life kind of starving. And that's a great way to make the distinction between, it's okay to do that once in a while. It's really not a great life plan to have as a lifelong strategy.
Right. You give some suggestions to help people with their patterns. You want to talk about that?
Well, yes. The first thing, of course, is to recognize them.
Very key.
And the second is to look at making choices that are easy to make, that are not going to rock the boat terribly, and sort of float some trial balloons, making changes, articulating what you need. A lot of times, one of the faulty beliefs that we have is that if someone loves you, they will anticipate your needs, and they will deliver them in a timely fashion. And, of course, that's really science fiction. But empathic people are able to anticipate their partner's needs, and they tune into someone the way a parent tunes into a baby and says, oops, she's tired now, or oops, she's going to need to go get changed now. Well, other people don't work that way. So you have to say, look, you know, tomorrow is a big day for me. I'm going to be teaching a workshop all day, and I'm going to be tired and cranky when I get home. So red alert on that. And I'm not going to want to cook. So let's get something in the house that we can warm up, because I'm not going to be up to it. So just planning ahead. I mean, it's just sort of simple things, but planning ahead and letting people know what your needs are going to be in a particular situation. And then partners love to know when you're going to be cranky, or when you're going to need some chocolate on hand, or whatever your needs are going to be. It's really playing fair to let them know in advance what's going on. And that will let you off the hook as well, so you're not going to feel that you need to dial your needs back in and erase them and sort of live your life holding your breath.
Right. Let's talk about the signs of love, and I guess that's really when we get into a lot of the dreams, but, you know, some of the different signs that, we would all like to see, or that we do see in our dreams.
Well, a couple of the signs I mentioned briefly. One is this idea of dreaming of returning home, or returning to a place that you loved the best. there's a real psychological movement that occurs when we find something that's going to work for us, and we will start to dream of what's called in psychology the return. And it might be going back to your hometown. It might be going back to a place in childhood where you, you know, went off to camp and had your the best friends of your life. Or the situation may vary, but if you're dreaming of returning to some place that was very, very precious to you, that is a sign that you are moving into a place in your heart where you're finding love again, but it's as if you're finding it for the first time. Because, of course, when we're making the right moves in our path and in our journey and in our emotions, we're able to have that return come back to a place in ourselves, and it's brand new because it's so wholesome and ideal for us. So that's one dream to be on the lookout for, going back home or back to your hometown. And instead of irritating you, all the little things that used to irritate you, it's actually wonderful. So that's something that I see a lot with dreamers when they have met someone that is going to be a powerful love connection for them. And all the connections are there. They will dream of returning home. Another dream that's very common is of building something. Building a home, homesteading, creating a garden, farming or ranching, doing things outdoors. But with that idea of building, that is a very common thing. And it has to do with building a structure, an emotional structure with someone that you've met. Another common dream is of dreaming the future. Very, very typical, both for men and women, and I didn't expect this, but when I was talking to men about it, men very often will have future dreams about someone that they have met. And going forward in time, sometimes one man in the book dreamt that he and the woman that he just met had been married all their lives, and they were old. They were an old couple sitting on the porch holding hands. And it was so real for him. And in the dream, they had been together forever, and it was the perfect match, that he knew this was the woman for him. And a few months down the road, they married, and they've been married for years and years and years now, and they both felt they fell in love very, very quickly, and they knew each other. They recognized each other. So this is something that I've heard from a number of people, this sense of recognition, more than a sense of hot sexual chemistry or sparks flying, which is, you know, sort of the way Hollywood portrays true love. True love, it turns out to have more of a sense of recognition, almost a soul recognition. Just the way when you found your life purpose or you found your work, you found the place or the town where you wanted to live, when you find the person you're supposed to be with, you have that sense of recognition as well.
And the not-so-pleasant dreams?
The not-so-pleasant dreams, the most common one.
Oh, the warning signs, that's what it's called.
Yeah, the warning signs. The most common one that I hear all the time, and it's really an easy one to recognize, and it's one that people should take seriously, is dreaming that you are back in the worst relationship of your life. We've all had at least one with the crazy boyfriend or the psycho partner or whatever, the person that used us or abused us or whatever. If you meet, and this is the way it typically presents, you meet someone new, they've got everything on your shopping list that you're trying to manifest, and you think, wow, this person's got it all. And then you come home and you dream that you're back in the worst relationship of your life. Because the dreaming mind and the deeper wisdom in us recognizes that pattern, and it transcends the great lifestyle that person has and the great presentation and the great sales pitch and the words that you've been waiting to hear someone to say. Your deeper mind will recognize, no, here's a person who is a user and abuser or whatever the pattern is, and it will give you that warning sign very early on in the game. Does that mean you should abandon that relationship? Well, frankly, I think that's a consideration. But if you want to move forward with your eyes wide open and with your front door unlocked so that you can make an early exit if you get some follow-up warning signs. So that's what I see, and and I hear it from people all the time. One woman in the book that I talk about was doing just that. She met someone that was, when she was really wanting to meet her soulmate. In fact, she had gone to a psychic who said, oh, your soulmate is actually on the way to you. He's in a different place, but he's coming to you, and you guys are going to meet. And so the next night, she went into a bar and met this great-looking guy, and she figures, she slaps her forehead like, this is it, he's my soulmate. Well, unfortunately, he wasn't. He was someone who preyed on affluent women for his, you know, getting through life. And so he knew everything to do, the flowers, the bubble baths, the gifts, the perfect phrases, and he swept her off her feet. And she believed that this, partly because of what she'd been told, exactly. She believed that this was the one. But immediately she started telling me, I'm having these terrible nightmares, and it's so strange because, you know, so-and-so is the epitome of all that's wonderful, but I'm dreaming I'm back in that bad relationship that I had decades ago. Mm-hmm. And so this was a big red flag to me to tell her to look out. Well, it turned out that this man, you know, she eventually found out because he was going around to her friends trying to borrow money.
Oh, no.
And she got out early, but when she confronted him and tried to break off the relationship, he got violent with her and locked her in the house and wouldn't let her leave.
Oh.
So she had to climb out a window eventually to escape from him. But she did get away, and she did get him out of her life and did get rid of him. And very shortly after that, she said, I'm going to change my life, and I'm moving to this nearby town because I want to get rid of everything that was connected with that terrible, traumatic experience. And of course, when she moved to the new town, she met the man that she later married and has been married to for many, many years, very happily. So she did meet her soulmate. They were on the way to each other, but she just sort of jumped the gun when she met this handsome guy in the bar the very next night.
The last test.
Yes.
Don't you hate those tests?
Yes.
You talk about unusual accidents. I just want to bring it up because it sounds like something that we probably, you know, we probably have happened but don't really think about.
Yes, and this is something that, you know, I can only talk about with certain people who are wide awake in this life because it strains credulity in a sense. But I've had a number of clients who have had, in the aftermath of a relationship that didn't work, once they exited, they reported, you know, during that year, I had more accidents than I've ever had in my life. Sometimes little broken bones, sometimes tripping and falling. One woman walked into her kitchen cabinet and cracked her forehead open. It just things that, you know, if you haven't been drinking and you're not accident prone, where did this come from? But it is so common that I wanted to put it in the book. And I even had to fight a little bit with my editor about it because she thought, this is going to make people think you're really off the rails. And I said, no, I've seen it enough times that I know there are women out here who are having this experience, probably men too, who are having a series of funny little accidents that are inexplicable. And I would argue that they are associated with some kind of profound imbalance that occurs when we are in a relationship where we're being pulled off track. And maybe, who knows, I don't see auras, but someone who could maybe tell us, look, your chi or your life force is completely cattywampus right now. and so you're kind of lurching through life, tripping down the stairs and cracking your skull on things. This can be a sign. This could be a warning sign. If you've got other disquieting evidence that a relationship might not be nourishing for you, and you start hurting yourself, maybe you could consider that as a metaphor that you're hurting yourself in an emotional sense in this relationship as well.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about themes and symbols. You talked about, like, you kind of went through different places in a house, and I think that's interesting. I like the windows. I thought, like, doorways. It's an interesting thought.
Well, very often, when we dream of a doorway, It has to do with an opportunity or something that is coming into our life. If something comes to the doorway, I mean, it's fascinating. There's actually almost a grammar to dream imagery. If something comes to the doorway, very often it will be something that is coming to your life, an opportunity or a choice or an important person knocking on your door. If you travel through the doorway, it's as if you're traveling over a threshold experience, and your life is going to be different potentially on the other side. Windows have a similar connotation, but they have to do with your perspective, your point of view. They're very, very common in dreams, and often the dreamer will gaze through a window and have a particular thing outside. One woman who was recovering from a divorce dreamt that there was a crashed plane outside her bedroom window, and this kind of symbolized the crashed relationship and how she felt that something broken was right there at her feet in her backyard. As she recovered and felt more optimistic and was actually glad she'd come out the other side of the relationship, she started dreaming that there were flowers growing outside her bedroom window.
Nice.
So what you see through your window can let you know what's going on in your life and how you are looking at it. And sometimes how we look at things, of course, is the thing that makes the difference in our lives and our ability to make choices. So windows can be a really empowering image in our dreams.
Right. What about our bodies as a dream symbol?
Well, this is hugely important, Lori. And one of the things that people should take away from our conversation is that dreams tend to use the human body as the symbol for whatever's going on whenever it's possible to construct a dream that way. So this is one reason why we have a lot of injuries in our dreams, why we have so much sex, why we have, you know, you'll lose a limb or there'll be an amputation or you'll get a heart transplant. There's all these gross and gory things that happen to the body, but those are symbolic of what's happening to you emotionally and psychically and spiritually sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So the changes that you go through can be changes to your body. Or the wounds that you experience will be wounds to the body. The birth of a new life can be giving birth in a dream or carrying a pregnancy. So look at the crazy physical things that happen in your dreams as symbolizing things that are happening to you emotionally, psychically, and spiritually.
Right, and you talk about the difference between negative and positive is often, you know, how you're feeling about it while you're in the dream.
That's absolutely true. So one of the things I like to look at in symbols is that there's always a positive potential and a negative potential. So you need to just ask yourself, not, well, what does a hand represent, but what is the positive potential of a hand? Being creative, being autonomous, being able to carve out your life. The negative potential might be about hanging on too much, clinging to something when you should let go. So that's something to check on as well. It doesn't mean just one tidy thing, but it's a continuum, and you need to see, well, where on the continuum of positive and negative does this particular dream fall for me?
Right. Well, this has been very interesting. How you end with the last chapter about, you know, hearing the intuitive wisdom of your heart, and that's kind of my whole focus. So how do you think this is achieved best, or what would you recommend to people?
Well, what I would recommend is making a practice of listening to yourself. Whether you're listening to the wisdom of your body or the imagery of your dreams or the way that your emotions speak to you, just making time to honor that and listen to it and not be afraid of it. We're so interested in relationships that we don't want to listen to ourselves because we're afraid of getting bad news. So we tend to shut that down when we start a new relationship. The very time when we most need to be listening to our wisdom. So don't be afraid of getting bad news. Just trust yourself and listen to yourself. It's always going to empower you, and it's always going to enable you to have more love in your life, not less.
Well, thank you, Jillian. You've been a wealth of knowledge. I loved your book. I think that anybody who is wanting, you know, to even have, you know, better understanding of love and relationship, that this, the complete dream book of love and relationships can definitely help you. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
Well, thank you. My research is on lifetreks.com, LIFETREKS, and there are opportunities there to click on the comments and write to me directly. The book, of course, is available everywhere online and in your better bookstores, so I hope you'll take a look at it and give your dreams and your intuition a chance to speak to you about your heart.
Nice. Well, thank you very much. This has been a pleasure, and I love how you've, you know, delved into it, and certainly obvious that it's one of your heart's passions.
Well, it is, and thank you. It's been a real treat to meet you and join you today. I appreciate it.
And thank you again for taking time out of your Thanksgiving.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.